Tonight's guest, Democratic Senator, presidential candidate George McGovern of South Dakota. You speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Collect Night Call's national phone number, area code 212-749-3311, or in the New York area, 866-5010. Night Call's host in New York City is Del Shields.
Good evening. Those of you who were lucky enough to be tuned to CBS television last night when they were doing a live pickup from the Democratic platform hearings in Washington saw an excellent example of just how complicated and complex the world is in which we live. Secretary of State Rusk was just finishing his statement in defense of the Johnson administration Vietnamese policy when an aide informed him of the Russian invasion of Czechoslovakia. Suddenly, our attention was dramatically shifted to almost exactly the other side of the world by an action that could be of considerably more consequence for us and the rest of the world than anything that might happen in South or North Vietnam. How will this influence what happens in Chicago next week when the Democrats get together to nominate a presidential candidate? Is this a factor that helps or hurts the candidacy of Richard Nixon? Will this cause you, the individual voter, to cast your ballot for an experienced Vice President Humphrey? Or would you prefer a new face, a McCarthy, or our guest tonight, Senator George McGovern of South Dakota? Senator McGovern is standing by in Washington to answer your questions and share your comments and conversation about why he should be the next president. You may speak to him direct at our national number, which is area code 212-749-3311. And, of course, you may call him Collect. That's national calls on area code 212-749-3311. In the New York area, please call us at 866-5010. That's local calls only on 866-5010. Senator McGovern, good evening, sir.
How are you, Mr. Shields?
I'm fine, thank you, sir. And thank you so much for taking time out during your busy campaigning to be with us on Night Call.
It's a pleasure to be with you tonight.
Senator, what will be the effect of the invasion of Czechoslovakia on the Democratic Convention?
Well, I think it's very difficult to appraise that, Mr. Shields. I do think it raises some questions about our own commitments abroad. One of the things that disturbs me in relationship to the regrettable Russian intervention in Czechoslovakia is that our own heavy commitment in Southeast Asia makes it less likely that we can protest the Soviet intervention effectively. It does raise some question about our own heavy involvement in the affairs of the Vietnamese. I regret very much that we're so heavily involved in trying to order the life of Vietnam. I regret very much the intervention of the Soviets in their effort to set matters right from their point of view in Czechoslovakia.
Senator, in reference to your own campaign, why do you honestly believe you have a chance to be nominated?
Well, I'm not under any illusions about that. I know it's an uphill fight. I got into the race very late. But 1968 has been a year filled with surprises. There have been many things that have occurred that no one could have foreseen at the beginning of the year. And I do think there's at least a fighting chance that a third candidate might emerge other than Senator McCarthy and Vice President Humphrey. So I think that if we can get by that first ballot, and of course that's a big if, I've got a good chance to emerge as a candidate that the delegates might turn to.
From what we have been reading in the daily press, it seems that many of the former Senator Kennedy's aides and many of his supporters have come under or have gone into your camp. Why is this, sir?
I think it's because, number one, my own views of what we need to do here at home in order to reconstruct our own society, plus my views on the importance of ending the war in Vietnam, were very close to the late Senator Kennedy's. I also share his view about the concept of the presidency. He believed that the President of the United States had to use that office in an active and compassionate and full-time manner if we were to heal the divisions here at home and to do the things that must be done to end neglect, inequality, and injustice, both in rural America and in the cities. I share that view. I share, I think, his concept of the presidency. I was a great admirer of the late Senator Kennedy, and I think he had some feeling about me and my contribution to American politics. So it's not entirely unnatural that many of his former aides and supporters are assisting my campaign.
The Secretary of State, Mr. Rusk, said today, or I should say perhaps, well, today or early this morning, he made reference to the writing of the Democratic platform, and he stated words to the effect, and I don't want to quote him exactly, but words to the effect that the writing of the Democratic platform was, the setting of the Democratic platform was not the place to determine any kind of action that should be done diplomatically. Am I right in assuming then that the Secretary is not in favor of the Democratic Party determining what our diplomatic policies should be?
Well, I agree to a certain extent that the Democratic Party can't chart every single move that we make at the negotiating table. But what is at stake here in the writing of the foreign policy plank of the Democratic National Committee is the question of whether we're on the right course in Southeast Asia or not. Is it in our interest, for example, to continue an open-ended commitment to the regime in South Vietnam when it's becoming more and more clear that they cannot command the respect and confidence of their own people? That's not so much a diplomatic judgment to be reached in the State Department as it is by the American people whose sons are dying in Vietnam, by the American taxpayer who has already poured $100 billion into that war, and by those who speak for one of our major political parties who presumably will have something to say in the next 4 years about how we ought to allocate our resources both at home and abroad. I think there are some fundamental foreign policy questions to be hammered out in the Democratic Platform Committee and perhaps on the floor of our convention. And I, for one, hope that neither the members of the Platform Committee nor the delegates will be silenced by the feeling that these are judgments that have to be left entirely to the diplomats in the State Department.
Senator, if we could assume for a moment that you could be elected President of the United States, and if you elected or if you decided to switch or to change the Secretary of State, would our foreign policy change to any remarkable degree?
Well, I would hope it would. I would do everything I could as President of the United States to urge a different course for the United States in foreign affairs. I would urge that we stop the unilateral interventionist type policy that has taken us so deeply into Vietnam. I think that struggles of that kind are essentially domestic civil strife that have to be resolved in the last analysis by the local people. Until we intervened, for example, in Vietnam, this was largely a struggle between two groups of Vietnamese as to who would control the government in Saigon. And eventually, the people that live in that country are going to have to decide that question. So I would hope that our policy in the future would be one that does not take us in unilaterally into problems of that kind, but one that would leave those questions to be solved by the local country. Now, in the event that we're confronted with a situation where outside intervention is needed, that ought to be handled under the auspices of the United Nations, not through any single country. How can we suppose that we are in a strong moral and political position to object to the Soviet Union intervening in Czechoslovakia when we have intervened in the affairs of the Dominican Republic, in the affairs of Cuba, and now in the affairs of Vietnam? Just as it's wrong for the Soviet Union to try to run the internal affairs of Czechoslovakia, so is it wrong for us as a great power to try to set matters according to our preference in Southeast Asia.
Senator, we have a number of calls standing by from Minneapolis, Minnesota, Indianapolis, Indiana, as well as New York City. And with your permission, we're going to go to our night call listeners, and we'll be coming back, and we'll be talking to you as well as our listeners.
Very good.
Tonight, why George McGovern should be the next president of the United States, and Senator McGovern is calling in from Washington, D.C. We'll take our first call from Indianapolis, Indiana. Mr. Edmund Davis is hearing night call over WTLC. Good evening, Mr. Davis. Mr. Davis?
Senator McGovern?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Senator McGovern, I'd like to ask you several questions, if I may. The first one being, would you advocate U.N. intervention in the present Czechoslovakian crisis?
Well, I wouldn't tell the United Nations what to do, but I would recommend that we take this issue to the Security Council for discussion. I think that's a matter that requires an international judgment. I'm not sure in this instance that it's practical either for the United Nations or for the United States alone to intervene. But I do think that's a decision that has to be reached in concert with other interested powers. And the best place to reach that judgment is not at the White House, but at the United Nations.
Yes, well, if the Czechoslovakian people, not the present government that happens to be a puppet government, I feel, if a socialist movement among the people asked for U.N. intervention, what would you feel would be the course of the United States in this action?
Well, I think that we ought to do what we could, working through the channels of the U.N., primarily through a diplomatic effort, to work out an arrangement for Soviet withdrawal. I don't think our first action ought to be guns. We've had situations of this kind in the past that have come before the United Nations, the Cyprus question, the conflict over Kashmir, the problems in the Middle East. The United Nations has not always been successful, but in some cases it has avoided open conflict. Now, here is a case in which there seems to be no major military clash at the present time. I don't think we ought to be quick to rush in troops at a time when there has been no major bloodshed on either side of this question. It's a matter that first we ought to use our diplomatic and moral influence to try to solve, and that I would hope would be the course the United Nations would take.
Yes, well, I have one more question, if I may ask it.
Go right ahead, sir.
Yes. Pertaining to the Democratic Convention in Chicago, I understand that Senator Eugene McCarthy has not made a formal position on the protest lodged by outside groups who say that they would like to have the delegations from Georgia, Texas, and Mississippi unseated because of discrimination and an election of members to these delegations. What are your views? I understand that Senator McCarthy has not made a formal statement because he's afraid of losing possible support in the Southern delegation.
Well, I don't want to speak for Senator McCarthy with any finality on this, because this is an issue he'd have to speak to himself. But my understanding is that he has made it clear that he's going to be on the side of those who are challenging those delegations. And he and I see that issue eye to eye. I think it's a little bit unfair to say that he's backed off on that issue, because he has been on public record as stating that he would support move to challenge the questionable delegations from those states that you mentioned.
I see.
Senator, if I may ask a question here, at this point it looks as though the biracial Mississippi delegation will be seated.
That's
instead
my understanding.
Right. Well, how do you think the Credentials Committee will deal with the others?
Well, I don't know. I'm not on the Credentials Committee. I think the Mississippi case was the clearest one. It looked very definitely to me as though the loyalist biracial delegation was very definitely the legitimate delegation from that state, and I was pleased to know that that judgment has been reached. There seems to be some serious question also about the composition of the Georgia delegation, that it is not reflective of the Negro proportion of the population in the state, and that it contains very definitely a discriminatory allocation of the delegates. So I would think that was another one that might come under serious question. I want to say very frankly, as one who came into the race very late, that I haven't had a chance yet to really focus on the composition of these delegations that are in question. But I do want to do what I can as one candidate at the convention to see that each delegation is a legitimate one and fairly representative of the various groups in the state.
Thank you so much. Mr. Davis, thank you so much for calling. Senator, we'll return with more calls from Minneapolis and from New York City and other points across the nation right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Senator George McGovern after station identification. In our city and state, and all across the United States, people are talking about trouble, black and white trouble. Some call it racial tension, or see poverty as the real problem, or say law and order has given way to anarchy in our streets. Most people agree, at least, that there is a crisis, and we are a people with many unanswered questions. This station believes you deserve to ask your own questions and get some answers, or at least opinions, from people who should know what they're talking about. So we bring you Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show where you ask your questions and express your opinions to leaders such as John Lindsay, Ralph Abernathy, John Gardner, Stokely Carmichael, and Sergeant Shriver. Night Call, the new nationwide radio forum on important issues facing you and the rest of the nation. Night Call, each weeknight. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Senator George McGovern about the next president. Again, Del Shields.
Our next night caller is Mrs. Phyllis Kahn, hearing Night Call over KSJR in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Mrs. Kahn?
McGovern?
Yes.
As I understand it, one of the reasons you declared your candidacy was to add another voice to those protesting the actions of the Johnson-Humphrey administration. Don't you feel that this week your insistence on participating in the proposed debate between Humphrey and McCarthy helped cancel that debate and, in a sense, then helped, in a sense, advance the candidacy of Hubert Humphrey?
Yes, I quite agree that the debate would have been helpful, and I would like very much to have seen it gone forward. But I felt, in all due respect to my own supporters and my own candidacy, that I was not in a position to claim to be a legitimate, full-fledged candidate and then permit the equal time provision to be waived in this debate. My entrance to that debate request was not the reason the debate was canceled. The reason was that the Humphrey camp notified the networks as of today that they did not wish to proceed with the debate. And any explanation other than that is not a correct one. I'm very familiar with exactly what happened, and there was trouble from the very beginning in working out arrangements that were acceptable to the Vice President and to Senator McCarthy. And the request that I entered to the networks to be able to participate in the debate was not the reason that it was canceled. I want to assure you of that.
Humphrey did state today that he felt that that was a contributing factor.
Well, that may have been his interpretation, but that is not the correct one. I had made it perfectly clear that if my request in any way would bring about the cancellation of that debate, that I would withdraw the request and accept time at an alternative period. That was not the reason the debate was canceled. I think it's quite clear that if the Vice President or Senator McCarthy had wanted to proceed with the debate, that they would not have objected to having a third candidate participate. You'll recall that when Senator Kennedy was alive, he refused to enter into a debate with Senator McCarthy unless the vice president was also brought into it. And I think that's the only fair way to approach it. When you have three candidates or four running, you don't give two of them free time on national networks and deny the others equal access to that audience.
But Senator Kennedy did join in the debate with McCarthy.
That's correct. And I would be happy to join in a debate on a three-way basis or a four-way basis or a two-way basis, and I think that's my right as an announced candidate.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's our national telephone number, area code 212-749-3311. Remember, if you're calling from out of town, we welcome your calls collect, and we welcome your comments and your conversations tonight with Senator George McGovern on why senators should be the next president of the United States. Our local telephone number in New York is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. Senator McGovern, we'll take our next call from New York. This time, Mr. Frank Render is hearing Night Call over WLIB-FM. Mr. Render, good evening, sir.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. Your question, sir.
Senator McGovern, I was wondering, I have the impression, my personal impression, that to me you came out of the thin air as a candidate for the presidency. And similarly, when Senator McCarthy also came out, I got the same impression. But now that he's been on the scene a lot longer than you have, I sort of beginning to understand him a little bit. But I'm wondering if you offered yourself for the presidency of the United States, what prompted you personally to make this decision? Was it on a personal conviction that as an American citizen you felt that the country is faced with so many problems and that you're willing to dedicate yourself personally, aside from political astuteness and all other political sophistication that goes into becoming a president? Is this a deep personal commitment on your part?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. There's no reason why you should be thoroughly familiar with my record, but I want to tell you, as a concerned citizen, that I was the first member of the United States Senate to speak out against our involvement in Vietnam. My first speech came in September of 1963, almost 5 years ago. I feel very deeply about that war, not only as a member of the Senate, but as a parent, as a citizen. And I felt that there were a number of delegates who had been pledged to the late Senator Kennedy who were also opposed to the war, but for one reason or another, they did not move to Senator McCarthy's standard after the death of Senator Kennedy. I don't know all the reasons why that did not happen, but it is a fact that I think we all recognize that there were perhaps several hundred delegates who were opposed to the war, but did not find it within their hearts to move to the standard of Senator McCarthy. And I thought that my entrance to the race, however late, would give those people a standard to whom they could repair, and that I would add to the voice being raised at the convention against the course we're following in Southeast Asia.
I see, Senator McCarthy, and I'm going to, Senator McGovern, I'm going to make a personal effort to familiarize myself a lot more with your background and a lot more with your involvement as senator and whatnot, your political background.
Well,
I want to ask
I
you one more question
that.
Because the remote possibility exists. Assuming that you are president of the United States.
Yes.
And a while back, in dealing with one of the questions that in terms of giving the country new directions,
yes.
You said that as president now, that you would urge that there be certain changes and certain tendencies in our government. Now, I interpret that slightly as meaning that you might feel, by virtue of saying urging, you didn't say direct or order or execute in your capacity as president of the United States.
Yes.
Do you see any hindrance in that capacity, assuming you were president, that you would be unable to put into effect those plans and those changes which you say you feel necessary.
And well, I've been in the Congress long enough to know that it's sometimes very difficult for a president to accomplish the things that he sets out to do. But I also know that the presidency is the most influential and powerful forum in the country. And if it's used wisely and used with passion and used with dedication, it's possible that office can build support within the country and within the Congress for those changes that one feels are desirable. I think one of the things that we need to do here at home, laying aside the question of Vietnam that's discussed so much, is to take a very careful look at the way we're allocating our budget funds for programs on the domestic scene. I've been convinced for a long time, for example, that there is probably a minimum of $10 billion that's being wasted on military gadgetry that contributes nothing either to our security or our national defense. And I would do the best I could to persuade Congress to allocate that excessive military spending into the reconstruction of our cities and our rural areas.
Now, can I ask you another question that it also is worrying me? And as one that is potentially to be in the presidency, I'm wondering today what checkpoints, what mechanics exist. For instance, let's assume that you were in the presidency and that you made such a decision so as to be so distasteful to the Joint Chiefs of Staff or to certain other power blocks, maybe stemming in relationships from the Senate Armed Services Committee, Chiefs of Staff, and they didn't particularly like what tendencies you're taking. For instance, I'm trying to raise this question on the highest level in this country as what happened in Cleveland and here in New York City, where the police department felt that they can openly break the law and criticize Lindsay and the commissioner of police. And in Cleveland, where the police dared to over the air cast obscenities against the mayor of Cleveland. To me, I see a certain breakdown of the control of the civilian. What exists, then, if you are in the presidency, that could assure me as an ordinary citizen that the concept of civilian control of the military and of the United States will be something that can be guaranteed and assured to the people?
Well, I believe, I can only tell you that I'm a very profound believer in civilian control of the military. I think it's one of the real foundations on which this republic has come to a position of respect and influence in the world. I do not believe in giving the military a free hand. I think the one of the major responsibilities of the President of the United States as a civilian official who is, in fact, responsible to all the people of the United States, is to exercise a firm and consistent hand over the military.
Mr. McGovern, the exercise of this control in terms of reality.
Yes.
For instance, the overthrow in Greece.
Yes.
No matter what the king would say or no matter what else would say, in theory, has nothing to do with the men that are in control of the army and are saying that we are here to stay and impose a new government.
Yes.
That control, the civilian control over the military, to me here, this power that a president would exercise,
yes,
to me it's vague and elusive. I don't see where an ex-president would say, no matter how distasteful this is to the military, this will have to be done. I saw that maybe there might have been a little bit of an executive, a civilian executive control over the military in the
Mr. Render, I don't think you've given the senator an ample opportunity to answer. You know, you're talking now about the change of complete institutions in America, and I'm sorry, but I've got to interfere because we have to break for station identification, but I'm sure the senator will answer right after. Thank you so much for calling, sir.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. This is NyQuil in New York. We'll return to Senator McGovern. And with calls from Omaha, Nebraska, Alliance, Ohio, as well as New York City, right after station identification. Stay tuned for the NyQuil Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Senator George McGovern after station identification. America is growing smaller. Speed of communication, speed of travel, and the worldwide revolution in human rights. These things bind us together into a common destiny. One man's problem is every man's problem. More and more we realize the only real problem is the human problem. People who need jobs, better education, better places to live, better medical care, and better hope for the future. A chance to become part of the American dream of freedom and opportunity. But for the American dream to succeed, each of us must be responsive to the needs of others. To give a damn about our brother or our sister, black or white. You'll find some answers to how you can help give a damn, how you can offer your help, in a new booklet called Whose Crisis? Yours. You can get a copy without charge by writing to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, P-O-M-O-N-A, New York. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Senator George McGovern about the next president. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to Night Call, and once again, as always, during the second half hour, we welcome the various Night Call stations who join us, and our guest tonight is Senator George McGovern, calling in from Washington, D.C. Tonight, we're discussing why he should be the next president of the United States. And just before we go to our Night Call listeners who are standing by waiting to talk to the senator, Senator, the question of institutions, I'm quite certain I heard Senator McCarthy and the late Senator Kennedy during the television discussion that was held prior to the senator's death, and this question came up in terms of, is it possible to change the structure of the government as we know it today? Is it possible to change the Secretary of State? And if you change the Secretary of State, is it possible to also change the various people who are involved in the bureaucracy of the State Department? Can you change the structure of the military? And can you change all of the people who have been involved in these various departments for 15, 20 years or so who have become career people? Is this at all possible? Senator? Senator McGovern? We'll try to get the senator back on the line, and while we're doing so, we'll go to Mrs. Irene Young, who is hearing Night Call over KBON in Omaha, Nebraska. Mrs. Young? Good evening, Mrs. Young.
Yes, Bill, yeah. I can hardly hear you.
Well, we can hear you very well.
Can you?
Yes, we can.
Did you get a letter from me?
Did we receive a letter from you?
Mm-hmm.
I did not receive it personally, but perhaps it came into our office.
Well, I wrote you. It was a beautiful piece in the paper here in regards, beautifully written by some woman who said black and white make gray, and it was so beautifully written and everything, and I wanted to compliment you so very highly on your handling of this program.
Well, we thank you very much.
And I incorporated that in my letter.
Thank you very, very much.
Is Senator McGovern available?
We have lost the senator temporarily, and we're trying to get him back now. So if you'd like to present us your question, we'll see what we can do in terms of handling it and try to get the...
Yes, I was just wondering. I don't see how he can put the Cuban question or any of the other questions on a par with the Vietnam question, because we were invited in Vietnam. Does he believe that?
Well, the senator can't answer for us at this moment because we have temporarily lost him, and we're waiting for him to come back to us.
Well, what do you think?
Well, would you state your question again, please?
That we were invited to South Vietnam to help them.
We were. Would you just state it once more, please? I'm having a little bit of difficulty hearing you.
We were invited into Vietnam.
Right. We were invited into Vietnam. Okay.
And we sent, Eisenhower sent people in ahead of the troops. to give them counsel and everything.
Uh-huh.
And then it was followed up by sending in troops. But I don't see how he can make a parallel of the situation in Czechoslovakia and the thing that we have now in regards to Vietnam.
Well, I think that the whole political question in America, many politicians find it very difficult, and not to cast any aspersions at the senator, but I think many politicians find it very convenient to kind of find convenient answers for people. First, I think that all of America, as well as the entire world, is concerned about the Czechoslovakian question, but at the same time, we are concerned about Vietnam, and we're also concerned about Cuba, and we are concerned about Korea and other trouble points across the country. I think it comes back to a point, the basic point is that if you have the United Nations, and if the United Nations has been set up as a peacekeeping agency in the world, then it's time for us to begin to go back to the United Nations and have them to solve the problems.
Well, Bill, haven't we tried that?
I don't think that we have tried it totally.
You don't?
No, I don't. I don't believe that we've tried it totally. And I think it goes back that we need people in Washington, and we need people who are involved in making decisions for America to decide that the United Nations is where we should go.
Well, I think so, too. And I don't think that we have very much hope in the United Nations with the Russians with the veto.
Well, let's see what some of our other listeners have to say about this, Mrs. Young.
Well,
okay?
I would appreciate it, and keep up the good work.
Thank you so very much, and keep listening.
All right.
Thank you so much. This is Night Call in New York, and our guest tonight is Senator George McGovern, who's calling in from Washington, D.C., and we have temporarily lost the senator, and we're hoping to get him back very, very shortly. In the meantime, we'll go to Alliance, Ohio. Mr. Robert Hendricks is hearing Night Call over WFAH. Mr. Hendricks, good evening, sir.
Good evening. I would like to ask Senator McGovern to briefly state his views on the draft. And also, if he has considered running as a vice presidential candidate with Senator McCarthy, or running in a ticket with Senator McCarthy.
Well, the senator cannot answer you at this moment, and we're just looking, taking a moment out here to look through some of the material that we have to see if we have anything that the senator has stated in reference to his views on the draft. And I think we have the senator back, so just hold on just a moment. Senator?
Yes.
I'm sorry we lost you for a moment there.
Well, I guess Chicago is not the only place where they're having telephone trouble.
Well, we welcome you back. We have on the line Mr. Robert Hendricks, who's calling in from Alliance, Ohio. And his question is your views on the draft.
Well, I'm opposed to the draft, and I voted against its extension the last time the Senate voted on it a few months ago. I favor a voluntary system whereby we pay men enough to attract them without forced labor. The draft is the only part of our national life where we still impress people into service on a compulsory basis and then pay them about half what they could earn on the outside. I'm opposed to that. I think it's unfair and discriminatory, and it should have been replaced a long time ago with a voluntary system.
Mr. Hendricks?
Yes.
Does that answer your question, sir?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling, sir.
Mm-hmm.
This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. And, of course, you may feel free to call collect. Our guest tonight is Senator George McGovern, and our discussion is why Senator McGovern should be the next president of the United States. Our next caller coming in from St. Louis, Missouri. Thank you. Mr. Robert Vetter, I hope that's what it is. Mr. Robert Vetter, who is hearing Night Call over KMOX-FM. Mr. Vetter, good evening, sir.
Good evening. Good evening, Senator McGovern.
How are you, Mr. Vetter?
Fine. I've got a couple questions on international monetary policy, and I was wondering if you have any specific, or what specific plans you have for reversing the unfavorable balance of payments.
Well, Mr. Vetter, two-thirds of the unfavorable balance of payments stems from our involvement in Vietnam, and we're not going to really end the balance of payments deficit until we end that war. It's all right to talk about keeping school teachers and students going to France during the summer vacation, but that's not the answer to the balance of payments problem. I think a second step that we need to take is to require the other members of the NATO alliance to pick up their share of the troop commitment in Western Europe. From the very beginning, the United States has carried a disproportionate share of the military manpower load in Western Europe. We've had six divisions stationed there now since the 1950s. And the time has come for the nations of Western Europe to begin supplying their own military manpower needs. If we would reduce our own commitment and let the Europeans pick up the slack in Western Europe and end the war in Vietnam, we'd also end our balance of payments problem. Until we do that, we're not going to end that problem.
Okay, let me ask you, what portion of our balance of payments is attributed to foreign aid?
Not very much of it. Two-thirds of the present balance of payment problem stems from the war in Vietnam, about a sixth of it from our troop commitment in Western Europe, and perhaps something less than a sixth to our foreign assistance program. But of the foreign aid that we're now making available to other countries, 80% of it is for goods that are purchased here in the United States. So that's really not the problem.
Okay, well, aside from that, just in terms of the foreign aid program itself, do I understand that foreign aid is given to other countries is in terms of cash? Or do we actually send them goods and services from this country?
Well, as I say, of our total economic and technical assistance program, 80% of it is in the form of commodities or materials that are produced here in the United States. We do make available some financial resources through the World Bank, through the Development Loan Fund, and through other agencies of that kind. But most of our financial aid now is in the form of long-term loans and hopefully will be repaid.
Hopefully.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is NICOL in New York, area code 212-749-3311. And, of course, you may call us collect from out of town. That's area code 212-749-3311. Our guest tonight, Senator George McGovern. And, of course, you may call him, and we welcome your comments as well as your conversation. Our next caller from St. Paul, Minnesota, Mrs. Sternberg, is hearing NICOL of WPBZ. Mrs. Sternberg, good evening.
Hello, good evening, sir.
How are you?
May I speak to the governor, please?
This is Senator McGovern.
Yes, Senator. I have one question, please. Now, I have come to this country in 1956 from Germany, and you know, it seems like you have given, I mean, the American people or the American government has given so much money to foreign countries. And to me, it seems like this must have somewhere come out of taxes. And yet these people don't really like us. I'm an American citizen today. I have been for almost 10 years now. But they don't like us. So why do we, I'm talking as an American now, why do we throw money back over there and yet you have all these troubles with them? Can you explain that to me, please?
Well, I do think some of our aid has been given out without proper care and without enough guidelines to it. For example, I'm against the granting of military aid to countries that are more likely to use it against each other than they are to strengthen their own capacity for independence. I think there's something obscene about the aid that we gave to Pakistan and India for military purposes that they turned around and used not to defend themselves against the possibility of a communist invasion from Russia or China. Quite to the contrary, they used it against each other. And we saw the specter of American patent tanks in Pakistan firing at American Sherman tanks on the Indian side. Now, this is the kind of waste and foolish assistance that I think we ought to cut out. I do think that carefully planned technical and economic aid to the developing countries, providing it is tied to self-help efforts on the part of those receiving countries, is in our interest. It does help create the possibilities of peaceful, orderly development, which is in our self-interest. I don't think we can live in security and peace in a world where most of the people are desperately poor, desperately hungry, and without hope. So whatever, to whatever extent we can make a modest and useful contribution to lifting standards of life around the world, I think we do improve the chances of peace.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. But on the other hand also, don't you think that we have so many, maybe not so many poor people, but so many people who need help in this country, right?
Yes. I think they ought to be taken care of first.
Right.
And I have no objection to that. I used to be the director of our overseas food assistance program under the late President Kennedy. I was the U.S. Food for Peace director in 1961 and 62. And President Kennedy always made sure that we followed out that provision of the law that required that American surplus food first be offered to needy Americans before it became available for countries abroad. And I think that's a sound principle. If we don't take care of the health and well-being of our own people, we're not going to be in a position to help others.
Right. Mrs. Sternberg, thank you so much for calling.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
This is NyCall in New York. We'll return with our guest tonight, Senator McGovern. And we have calls coming in from Cleveland, Ohio, as well as Stamford, Connecticut, right after station identification. Stay tuned for the NyCall Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Senator George McGovern after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call, historian William Katz on Whatever Happened to Black History. He should know his subject. Katz is general editor of a publishing company called Arno Press, who, with the New York Times, are republishing some 45 books about the black American that have long been out of print and unavailable. Katz says the American black past has, for the most part, been suppressed, neglected, or distorted, not always deliberately, but by a sort of unconscious racism. Katz also says the distortions of history used to justify discrimination are deeply embedded in our folklore, and that the popular image of Sambo laboring contentedly under a benevolent master is still with us today. Historian William Katz on Whatever Happened to Black History, tomorrow night on Night Call. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Senator George McGovern about the next president. Again, Del Shields.
And we'll go to Cleveland, Ohio. Mr. Alan Roth is hearing Night Call over WERE. Good evening, Mr. Roth.
Yeah, good evening, Senator McGovern.
How are you?
Fine. You know, now that the Czechoslovakian question has gone to the United Nations, I think there's any possibility of the United States and Russia working out a compromise, whereas the Soviet Union will pull her forces out of Czechoslovakia if we'll pull out of Vietnam.
Well, there's nothing that would make me happier. I would like to see us start to unwind that Vietnamese involvement in any event. I think it's in our interest to do it, no matter what the Russians do in Czechoslovakia. The day when great powers intervene in the affairs of little countries ought to be ended. And the quicker we can find a systematic way to start reducing our troop commitment in Vietnam and turning the responsibility for Vietnamese affairs over to the people that live in that country, the better off we're going to be. So I would buy that proposal.
Well, do you think the question will come up in the Security Council this week?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised there will be some suggestion along that line. Of course, I can't anticipate what the members of the Security Council are going to propose, but it wouldn't surprise me to see something like that suggested.
My next question deals with the issue of law and order, which all the candidates are stressing. How do you stand on that, and, you know, what method are you going to have to maintain law and order?
Well, I do think that we have to upgrade our law enforcement and crime detection techniques. We need to raise the professional standards of our police all across the country and to use the most modern and up-to-date techniques. But beyond that, simply talking about law and order without giving consideration to the kind of desperate conditions under which many of our people live in the internal city is not the answer to the problem. As you know, most of the increase in crime in this country in the last 10 years has been among teenagers. In fact, the number of arrests has increased about 60% just since 1960 among those 18 years of age and under. There's actually been a slight decrease in crime and arrests among those above the age of 18. So what we're really talking about in lawlessness is the kind of petty crime, the beatings, the purse snatchings, the breaking of into buildings and robbery and that type of thing involving our young people. And much of that comes out of the most desperate conditions in our great cities. I think until we begin to clean up some of these areas of bad housing and bad recreation, bad schools, bad opportunities, it's going to be very difficult to hope for a lawful and orderly society.
Okay, well, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you for calling, sir. This is Night Cole in New York. We'll go now to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mr. Lee Edwards is hearing Night Cole over WAMO-FM. Mr. Edwards?
Hello?
Your question, sir.
I'd like to know what the gentleman... I have a question to ask him. And it's only a few words, and I'd like to know what his opinion is about it, because it's searching my mind, you know.
All right.
Can I ask the question to him?
Certainly.
Sir?
Yes.
The question is, what do you really think about human rights?
Well, of course, this is the...
Pardon me?
Yes, this is the real foundation of our whole society, is the respect for human rights, and
yes,
that's what the American Constitution is all about.
Yes, sir.
The basic outline of the U.S. Constitution, and more specifically, the Bill of Rights, relates directly to that question. The,
yes, sir.
The rights that citizens have to conscience, to freedom of worship, to the ballot box, to the trial by jury, all of those things that we have regarded as precious parts of our tradition over the years, and I'd hope they'd be upheld.
Yes, sir. Can I ask you another question? Sir?
Go right ahead.
Do you think you're a senator, aren't you?
Yes.
Sir?
Yes, yes. He is.
Mm-hmm. I can't recall his name.
Senator McGovern.
McGovern. Well, if he's a senator, I think this is one, you know, thing you could talk on all night and, you know, about it, if you really understood it.
Well, I guess we haven't got all night, unfortunately.
Yes, true. But I think myself, if you explain it right and search for this thing, that you'll find it. Don't you think so?
I appreciate that. I hope so.
Well, that's all. And I'll pray for you. Thank you.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
This is Night Call in New York. Our guest tonight is Senator George S. McGovern, and we are discussing why he should be the next president of the United States. And this time we'll go to Stamford, Connecticut. Miss Ann Wiley is hearing Night Call over WSTC. Good evening, Miss Wiley.
Good evening. Senator McGovern.
Yes, Miss Wiley.
First of all, before I ask you my question, I want to tell you that I am Fairfield County organizer for the State Kennedy Action Corps, which is quite an active organization here in Connecticut.
That. I'm very impressed with what you've done.
Well, we're doing as much as we can to do the things that Senator Kennedy wanted to do that he was not able to do.
Yeah.
Also, I'll be out at the convention, and although I wrote to Ed McDermott at your office at his request, telling him where we're going to be, so on and so forth, we'll be at the PIC Congress, and if you need any help, I'm an enthusiastic supporter,
well,
and will do anything for you
thank
to
you
see
so
that you get the nomination.
Thank you.
My question is, let's assuming that you win the nomination, I'm curious to know how you would feel about asking Senator Ted Kennedy to be your vice presidential running mate.
Well, that's almost too good to be true. I think he'd be the greatest asset that any candidate running for the presidency this year could have as his running mate. I do respect Senator Kennedy's statement of 3 or 4 weeks ago that he would not, under any circumstances, accept the vice presidency. And as you know, he said again today at Holy Cross University in his speech that he would not be a candidate in 1968. And I think under the circumstances, when one considers what has happened to that family this year, that they're entitled to some respite from the pressures of politics. But I do want you to know that I have the very highest regard for Senator Kennedy, as I did for his brothers, and no one would strengthen the Democratic ticket any more than he.
The combination of you two, I think, would be marvelous.
Thank you very much.
Senator, can I ask you one more question?
Fine with me.
Do I understand correctly that the Kennedy family is aware and approves of your running?
Yes, there's no question about that. They are not going to make any formal endorsements of anyone because of their position that they do want to remain free from convention politics this year, but it has been discussed with the family, and they're in full approval of what I'm doing.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you can count on some support from Stanford.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Bye now.
Senator McGovern, assuming that you do not get the presidential nomination, would you accept a vice presidential nomination?
No, I would not, for two reasons. Number one, I want to be in a position to speak out on the issues without having to check with someone else. A vice president can't do that, and I would prefer to stay in the Senate rather than to accept the vice presidency. Secondly, I'm up for re-election to the Senate, and if I don't succeed in winning the nomination for the presidency, I would not want to risk my re-election to the Senate by taking the second spot on the ticket. I doubt very much if it would be offered to me in any event, but I would turn it down if it were.
Senator, we have less than a minute, and I would like to pose this question to you, and I know it's going to be rather difficult in the amount of time we have left. Could you give us the three most important issues facing the President of the United States in the year of 1968?
The number one issue in 1968 and beyond will be to end the war in Vietnam. The second issue will be to reconstruct our cities that have been so long neglected in terms of housing, schools, hospitals, recreational facilities. The third major step will be to put an end to racism in the United States. With reference to the cities, I think we have to link to that the problems of rural America, because if we don't stop the steady migration of people out of agricultural America into the cities, we're going to bleed off resources both in agricultural America and add to the congestion and the problems of the cities.
Senator McGovern, thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Night Call. This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
On vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, historian William Katz on Whatever Happened to Black History. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church. Presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.